A Nigerian nurse who treated an Ebola patient has died. She's just the second Ebola death in that country. And overall, the outbreak has killed more than 900 people in West Africa so far. But public health officials worry because Nigeria is Africa's most populous nation, and this latest death occurred in Lagos, the continent's biggest city. And today, at the U.S.-African Leaders Summit in Washington, President Obama pledged to aid Africa as it deals with this Ebola outbreak.
The United States and our international partners will continue to do whatever we can to help our African partners respond to this crisis and to stand with the people of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
Robin Sanders is a former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria and the Republic of Congo. She's attending the Africa Summit. Sanders witnessed the ravages of Ebola firsthand during a 2002 outbreak in Congo and spoke to our colleague Robin Young about it.
Ambassador Sanders, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And you served during another Ebola outbreak. Do you have a sense of deja vu, or is this very different?
Well, I have both, actually. I have a sense of deja vu because I know how serious and how quickly the disease can spread. But I also have a sense of worry because, one, I don't know if this is a new strain, if that's why it's spreading so rapidly. And I also don't know how well it's being contained in the areas in West Africa that's being affected right now.
Well, and what's to be done, especially diplomatically? Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci of the Institutes of Health, says this could be shut down. This is a cultural and policy issue in Africa that leaders were slow to respond, slow to begin quarantining, slow to educate people about cultural things like kissing the dead goodbye. What can be done diplomatically about that?
Well, I think there are two things. One, Ebola had not been in West Africa before, so it really is something new for the communities there. There are tons of traditions that are given out of respect for those who have passed. There are a lot of elements of tradition that require really touching so the souls pass on without difficulty to the next life. So those are hard things to address. And I think to say that the West African community was slow to respond, the leadership, it was very new for them. And I think it was very new for health workers because none of them had dealt with it before. Quite different from Central Africa, where they've had outbreaks over the last two decades.
Well, how do you proceed with gently, even in the beginning, introducing some of these ideas when, in fact, as we saw, there were some people who distrusted the medical services and weren't bringing people in, that there's a distrust there potentially to start with?
The distrust is definitely there. They don't understand sort of, you know, Western medical techniques necessarily. Normally in small closed village societies like that, and I've been in many of them, if you don't come in or introduce through the leadership of that village or that community, then you're an outsider and they're not going to trust you. You don't speak their language. You don't know their traditions. And so healthcare workers that are going in from other countries particularly need to have some sort of cultural brief so that they know how to try to approach these communities. So there's one. There's an element that always bothered me about this because it can be cyclical, at least it was in my experience in Congo. And it generally tends to happen sometimes when there are shortages of alternative proteins. If you look at some of the history for Ebola, some of the anecdotal history actually has the jumping species that the gorillas and primates and bats are carriers, and that somehow it's crossed over to the human species by either ingesting the meat of an infected primate or bat.
It's been called bushmeat.
Right, exactly. It's not always bushmeat as well, because I don't consider primates in that category. Mm-hmm. But yes, it can be, you know, categorized easily as bushmeat. So, you know, I don't know whether or not people are also looking at the cyclical aspect of food security when people are really, really looking for alternative sources of protein. And I think that needs to be brought into it as well.
But what's to be done about things like we read that front page story in the New York Times yesterday, which enraged a lot of people. A reporter traveled to the home of a family whose loved one had died. They were told they had to be quarantined. They actually had security posted at the door, two policemen. But people were coming and going. A woman from the house went to the community well to wash dishes. The guards wandered off, didn't seem to care. How do Westerners, you know, try to enforce the sense of security?
Well, I think you have to approach it from a different sense than just security. You have to be able to go in at the village level in terms of the leaders and the elders, try to get them to understand how this could decimate their village, decimate the future of their village. And these are some of the precautions that you need to take. And, you know, have that dialogue with them and then have them have that dialogue with the people in their villages. Because other than that, everything that we are putting in place to quarantine the villages or the houses or what have you is in contravention to their social mores and beliefs. So you have to go into the system at the belief level, which is the elders, the rulers, you know, the village leadership.
The elders are, would be more effective even than posted police. You say, yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because there's a lot of distrust of police.
What about stronger efforts, closing borders? Some people have talked about sanctions.
Sanctions is not the answer. I mean, it always amazes me when it comes to the African context that we want to go to the extreme rather than looking at the reality. Let's put this in the context of, you know, what's real. The new dynamic here that wasn't necessarily as big of an issue as it was in my experience with Ebola in Congo is that you have, you know, people, goods and services moving a lot more given the you know, technology and aviation and certainly a lot more international flights coming in and out of the continent. And I think what's missing is the link between the aviation industry and certainly the civil aviation authorities in these countries, along with the health ministry. They need to be working in tandem.
And to do it while avoiding the snake pit, really, of the old perception that this is the Western world coming to rescue the African world, even though there are several countries who've asked for help and need help, it just falls into that, once again, this that disabling image that it can't help itself.
Well, I think the disabling image is our fault. That's how we interpret it on this end. I don't think that Africans see themselves in any way as in a disabling image.
I just want to say that it's Africans like Binyavanga Wainana who have expressed that opinion that when Western nations rush to events like this, it gives the impression that Africa can't help itself.
Certainly, you know, there are challenges with health systems in all of the countries that are affected. There were challenges in the health system in Congo at that time as well. But I think the real, real paradigm here that's different is the population density issue. West Africa is the most population dense region of the entire continent. And so the spread and the containment issues are real challenges because you have people living on top of each other in terms of the urban areas. And so how fast can we get something contained so that it doesn't spread in that population?
That's Robin Sanders, former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria and the Republic of Congo. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Ambassador Sanders speaking with our colleague Robin Young.